mean to tell you that Lo-Fi Garage Soul is now, everybody. It is here, it is now. And it is how my Monday Muse describes themselves. The Night Party is what they call. They're actually a duo. They're two blokes, Rick Sands and Buck Lexton. And they've released their debut album, Get To You. I heard it and I just thought it was great. And so I thought I'd get them in. And they must have spent at least an afternoon recording it. Gents, thanks very much for dropping by.
Good afternoon, Waleed.
It's dirty, man. This is dirty. It just sounds dirty. This is, I imagine, what you were going for.
Well, that's cool, man, because we thought it was too clean when we record it, in a sense that when we play it live, it's a lot rawer. And
really? How much rawer could it be? It sounds pretty raw on record.
Yeah, well, I suppose we wanted to get that. We didn't want to have it sanitised, so we made sure we played through old amps and the vocals went through amps. So that's probably what you hear.
Vocals through amps.
Yeah.
Vocals through amps.
I think the thing is, too, though, when we made a lot of recordings on iPhones, you know, we just record on the phone. Yeah. And I always found going into the studio, even though we had this lo-fi sensibility, compared to the phone, it sounded like it was produced, you know, and took 3 months to produce it.
That's true.
And there was times where I was like, oh, man, we're missing that. And I think when you go into a studio, I think you gain stuff and you lose stuff. But I still think that the album has that kind of lo-fi authenticity to it.
Yeah, when you compare it to other things. I suppose we're comparing it to really, really grungy lo-fi stuff. You know, I think of lo-fi, I think of Guided by Voices and really early Pavement stuff. And there's moments of this that beautifully, I mean, we really tried to serve the songs. So there's crystalline piano and segments like that. But then there's that, that more rough, fuzzy sounding instruments on there.
You could just release your iPhone recordings.
We probably will have to.
Yeah,
at some point.
I reckon for sure. I think people are doing that these days. And I think it's funny. I mean, when I listen to iPhone recordings, that reminds me of listening to an old 45 or something. There's a certain quality to the actual audio. It's like, this actually sounds cool, you know.
What is it? Is it because it's a bit clipped or something?
I don't know. It's not even. It's just something. It's like those old Alan Lomax field recordings. It has this sort of quality where there's all this air and breath in it. You know, it doesn't feel. You don't have that sense of that kind of strange silence you get from, you know, studio recordings.
And because it's recording the room.
Yeah, it's recording the room.
Not just the sound that happens.
Definitely. And I think there's just something about when you actually record an iPhone, you just push record, there's no concept. As soon as you go into a studio, you've got all the pressure, the money it's costing you. Like, oh my God, this guy, is he actually the guy recording this? Is he on top of it or whatever?
Yeah, right.
You know, so with an iPhone, I think it's like it catches the immediate inspiration. And it was a matter of getting that inspiration, going into a studio and going to this guy, can you capture this, us doing this?
Well, I would suggest he has. Of course, your own judgment is entirely up to you. But when I heard it, I thought, this is dirty. That was the first thing I thought. We're going to hear a bit. This is Such a Fool. It's from the album Get To You from our Monday Muses, The Night Party.
Yeah.
Such a Fool from the album Get To You by The Night Party. The two gents that make up The Night Party are my Monday muse today. And if you're wondering about that, that's lo-fi garage soul that you're hearing. And that's about as hi-fi as it gets. That, I reckon, is about the cleanest sounding track on the album. How hard do you have to work to make it sound like that?
Because we're such a simple setup, we play the rhythm sections through. It took a while to get that one because we had real demo-itis. We'd fallen in love with the demo. I'd sort of compiled other multi-tracks onto the demo, and it did sound like an old Jamaican 45, and it was slower, and it had all these other parts to it, and it was complex and strange, and we sort of knew we wouldn't get it, but we had a crack at it, and it came out faster and different, and we sort of embraced that it was a different version of the song. The actual rhythm, we left it to Paul Mabry, our producer, to get the guitar and the drums sounding right, and we made sure that the vocals and the guitar both had a particular sound that was similar to the demo.
The vocal sounds really interesting.
Yeah, we put it through a beautiful old, quite a large reverb tank that Paul's got. It's an old tank that he somehow got from Albert Studios in Sydney, which is the old Easy Beats.
That's a studio that recorded basically anyone who's anyone.
That's right, yeah. So it was quite nice to think that Bon Scott's voice may have floated through those springs.
Sounded a little different, though.
That's right, yeah, a few octaves higher.
We also had microphones down a stairwell So we sort of had multitude of reverbs going on. So it wasn't just going through the one desk. It was a mixture of different stuff. It was really Paul. I mean, he's kind of a mad scientist, you know, the producer, and we really invited him into the process because, I mean, we knew what we wanted to do, but we didn't know how to get that sound, and he was kind of the third part that really brought it out.
It's amazing, though, listening to you, all the techniques that are required to get this lo-fi sound.
Yeah, well, exactly. It's kind of ironic, isn't
it?
So, like, it's a bit of a dual experience going into a studio. It's a baptism of fire. You don't know, like I said before, you know, you lose some stuff, you gain some stuff, and some people, like, find it dirty, some people find it clean. It's sort of weird. It's such a sort of...
I think it depends on your reference points. You know, it's like anything if you're comparing it to Queen.
Yep.
It's incredibly lo-fi, but if you compare it to really brutal tape field recordings and things, it's quite smooth.
Is there a sweet spot?
Yeah, I think it is. That's what we're going for.
That's what you're aiming
at. We're aiming straight at that sweet spot.
Yeah. So you want to be dirty as far as clean people are concerned,
That's
but clean
right.
as far as dirty people? Is that what?
Yeah. It's like being too heavy metal for the glam rock community.
We want to sit exactly where no one wants it. Yeah. That's exactly the sweet
spot. That could be a Achilles heel. But it's certainly, that song was the hardest one to record, and it was actually the hardest one for us to play for a long time live. It took a long time for me to work out how to play those drum lines and sing it at the same time, particularly on those long high notes. So I've learned how to reposition myself and do the rolls as I keep myself near the mic. That took a while because we recorded the original jam. We recorded it straight through, and then we put the vocals on and the lead guitar. It was born pretty quickly.
But what's interesting about the album is there are a lot of, I mean, I say it's dirty because of the sound, but it's dirty because of the composition as well. I mean, the guitar riffs that you're putting together, not so much in that track, but in other tracks, are inherently dirty.
Yeah.
Are you thinking production when you're writing these things?
No, it's the way we write music, it's immediate. It's like, we'll sit there, I'll either have a riff in my head or we'll just start jamming. And the song comes out literally in 2.5-3 minutes, and
it's done. This is pretty good going.
And it's done. The vocals are completely improvised. Such a Fool came out just like that. Some of the other tracks came out immediately, just straight. There was nothing else to do.
So you can basically write and record an album in a day.
Definitely. Someone wants to give me some money, I'll do that. Let's prove, people out there,
yeah, you want to do a crowdfunding thing?
Yeah, definitely.
Album in a day. Yeah. So the rule would have to be you get whatever money you get, and you have a day from beginning to end, you go in with a blank piece of paper and you come out the end.
Yeah, I reckon that's second album, man. I reckon that's a great idea.
It's a great way to do it.
Yeah, then the pressure's on, you know. Mm.
If you only raise $6, well, you got your iPhone. Mm. You can always
One of the tags when we're thinking of, you know, how do you sort of let people know what you're doing without just saying it's a rock band. Originally, we think, well, it's sort of like improvised soul because we've imbibed all this stuff. And from being music nuts, when we do sit down, it's almost like it's working within the framework, like a haiku or something. You work within the framework, but you express something new and from yourself. When the song comes in the door, we know it's something.
You know that it's arrived. Yeah,
and that's it. Mm. We know some songs don't exactly fit in, so they get put aside. We've got side projects. We've got these files on our computers where they're...
Oh, it's for the Vanity Project album at the end.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
The album is called Get To You. The band is called The Night Party. They are made up of only two gentlemen, Rick Sands and Buck Lexton, and they together are my Monday muse for the day. Speaking of which, muses.
Many and varied. This was sort of a hard thing, but at the same time it was easy. I mean, we could have chosen so many people that we both share a love of. But this song in particular that we're going to play today was it's a song that's been floating around between us for a while. We've been talking about it, and it was definitely the sound, the atmosphere and the colour of this song definitely influenced how we wanted that last track to sound. It's a Dr. John song. It was written back in, I think, probably early 70s or late 60s.
Or maybe it was even recorded, but I think it was used on one of these albums where he was forced to appease his record company by, so it said 16 greatest hits, but I don't think many people have even heard any of the hits.
But
really,
what I love about it is that you brought in vinyl. This is very dirty. You need to introduce Dr. John to us because I'm looking at that that vinyl cover and he looks like a scary dude.
He is a scary dude, yeah. He's leering. He's sort of leaning back from the mic. He's a gentleman with a fluffy beard. He's missing a few teeth. He's got sequins and glitter all over his cheeks.
And he's
wearing a top hat with mirrors on it, and some sort of admiral's uniform, and a feather in his hat.
To finish it off.
Just to finish himself off.
Well, that was his, his name was Mac Rabernack, and he became Dr. John, and he sort of took on this kind of New Orleans persona, which is kind of somewhere Cajun. In the swamp, Cajun voodoo man.
Right.
He's such a unique character. I mean, he was basically playing from the age of 15 in these bars and juke joints in New Orleans. His dad was a repaired jukeboxer, so he was always around it. But I think he was like pimping and all this different stuff at the age of 15, 16, playing music.
He was a great guitarist. So he's a session guitarist, pumping out tunes from an early age. And he got into a debacle and lost a finger.
He got shot. Shot in the finger. His left-hand ring finger, so he had to move. He moved on to bass and then he moved on to piano or organ.
Well,
whatever.
That's much easier without a ring finger.
Yeah, so he's a very colourful character. I think everything he does in music is kind of the things that we appreciate. I mean, he plays soul, he plays funk, he's dirty, and he's a bizarre cat. He's into this kind of gree-gree voodoo stuff that's kind of fascinating.
Just to warn people, this is not the usual Dr. John either. It's I think it was a session he did. Him and his friend Ronnie Barron, at the time, they were just pumping out 45s for a small record label, and this one sits somewhere between... Some people think it sounds like Bird Bacharach. You know, it's got that almost misty sort of arrangement, plus this old school sort of soul sentiment.
Can't wait to dip in. The track that we're going to play is called Did She Mention My Name? But before that, the Monday Muses that have walked in today are the Night Party, collectively. That's what they call themselves. Rick Sands and Buck Lexton, the Night Party. Thanks very much for talking to me.
Thanks, mate. Cheers.
All right. Did She Mention My Name by Dr. John, the choice of our Monday Muse. Drawing Room will be up after that.
What did she say? Did she mention my name? When you saw her yesterday, what did she say? Did she mention my name? Tell me, what did she say? Tell me, does she still love me? Or does my baby want to set me free? I my house. Who do you think she was? was thinking of. Did she mention my name?